And gently bringing that to a close. Open your eyes when you're ready. Looking around. So this poem is called Be a Good Host. Be a Good Host by Tony Spencer. Welcome the monsters, the fuck-ups, the loneliness, the judgments, the growling, the grieving, and the fears. Welcome the monsters. Slowly, let them find the seat they like. It may be your favorite chair, your lap, or that space behind the fridge. Welcome them. They smell of lavender. They may smell of lavender or sewage, of sweet sunrises, or the entrails of lost species. They may have been welcomed into your home like this, become very, very quiet all of a sudden. And some, perhaps one or two, may begin to scream. Be a good host. Bear with them. Make tea. Pour out the last of your elderberry vodka. And yes, those biscuits you've been saving for the apocalypse, them too. Be a good host, because now the thing is, you're in this together. Laws are being passed to stop you escaping. Be a good host. Welcome these ones you so unwittingly silence. The monsters are longing for you. They want you to notice them, to listen to their stories, to play with their tails, to let them wrap you in their greatest of hugs, to tend to their matted hair as if you had all the time in the world, because maybe you do. Be a good host. Let your welcome be timeless, where no guest ever feels you wanting them to leave, no matter how out of depth you feel. Be that guest house Rumi spoke of. Let the ones you've been holding at bay be your teachers, your lovers, your saviors, the bearers of new recipes, the writers of new love poems and radical manifestos. Be a good host. Welcome the monsters. So I'll send that out afterwards for those who might want it. Okay. So this is our seminar, free seminar on this topic of exiles, welcoming exiles. My name is Peter Gill. I'm a focusing teacher and, amongst other things, based in Stroud in southwest England. Yeah, and welcome to everyone here. I'm just going to shut my window because there's loud rain. So just bear with me. So for the next hour or so, we'll be exploring this topic. We'll look at welcoming, what I mean by welcoming. I'll look at what are exiles, or what do I mean by that in this context. There are lots of, that word is used in many contexts. We'll look a bit about how they show up in our life and how they show up in embodied practices like focusing, perhaps like other ones too, meditation and other disciplines. And we'll look a bit how to welcome them, something of that path. There'll be time for questions. There'll be a little bit of experiential exploration in the middle. And I think, yeah, that's what we'll be doing. Yeah. So I want to speak about welcoming, first of all. This word, I love this word, welcoming. It's become a kind of central principle, practice, concept, notion. All of those things, welcoming, has many dimensions to it. So I just want to say a little bit about what it isn't and what it is, just to get us in the ballpark of what I mean by that word. The word might have something different meaning for you, and that's okay. You might need to find another word that captures it. But for me, welcoming captures a lot of this attitude that we might bring. So what it isn't, it's not loving something all at once. Welcoming isn't that. Welcoming isn't it's also different from acknowledging or noticing or labeling. You know, lots of practices have kind of that to it, which are great. They're really good. Like noticing, no, that's a thought or that's a feeling, or welcoming is a bit more than that. And welcoming isn't letting parts of you take control. In other words, like giving the keys to your body to some part of you that just wants to rage at something and take it out on other people, you know, isn't that either. So sometimes people, yeah, think that by welcoming something, you have to let it run you. That's not the same. So what welcoming is, well, welcoming is, it's hard to define it really, but it's being curious, being empathic, honoring, being sensitive to what you're honoring, what you're welcoming. There's a kind of relational. It's a trust. It's also about trusting the intentions. There's something about welcoming, which is like, yeah, you can be here just as you are. And there's more to you than I know at the moment. You could, and of course I'm talking about an interior experience, but this principle applies outside of us too when we meet people to some extent. There's always more to the surface. So our inner life is just like that. There's more to these parts of us we exile. So welcoming is that. It's like a sort of, I don't know, in some traditions, you know, someone comes to your door and you welcome them in. You give them food and water, and you may not like them, you know, very much, but it's hospitable. You welcome them, and then you begin to connect. And then who knows what happens next? But there's something about that I like. It's, I like this word welcoming. Yeah. So that's, I guess, just as a way into our topic. And then this, what are exiles? What do we mean by exiles? So I'm going to read a story. I would like to tell the story, but I haven't got it, and it's only short, so I'll just read it. But it's just a story by Anne Weiser Cornell. So she's a focusing teacher, my focusing teacher, one of my first teachers. And she tells a story of a dog. So I'm going to read the story, and I think it will captures, or at least leads us into this topic really nicely, really beautifully. So once upon a time, there was a boy who had a dog. The boy and the dog loved each other and played happily as friends. But one day, the dog did something the boy's parents didn't like. To appease his parents, the boy had the dogs sent away. The boy had to send the dog away. Years passed, and the boy forgot there had ever been a dog. But inside him, there was still a place where something was missing. When he was a man, the missing place called him so strongly that he had to go in search of what he needed. His search brought him to the edge of a forest. Not knowing why, he found himself sitting and waiting. Slowly, gradually, two burning eyes appeared in the darkness of the forest. The young man waited. Slowly, gradually, a long pointed nose emerged. The young man waited. Finally, out of the forest, slinking, there came an animal. Thin, scarred, muddy, matted with burrs. You would hardly know it had ever been a dog. The young man greeted it softly. Hello. The ugly dog stopped, untrusting. The young man felt in his body the memory stirring of the good and happy times of his friend. He said to the animal before him, I want to know how it has been for you all these years in exile. And in his own way, the dog told him this and this. Sad, lonely, scared, bitter. The young man told the dog that he had heard it. He had heard all that he had gone through. And with this hearing, the dog visibly softened, became warmer and more trusting. After some time, it came close enough to be touched. When the young man touched the dog, he could feel the missing place inside him begin to fill in. And soon after, he took the dog home and gave it a bath and a warm place by the fire. After it felt loved again, it was no longer ugly. It was beautiful. So, yeah, exiles. the dog that's been banished to the forest. Parts of us have been, that for some reason have been taken out of awareness, if you like, pushed to the boundaries, into the shadows. And it's important to remember, really important to remember, that the word exile, it doesn't equate with bad or with unneeded or unwanted or something like that. It's just a kind of position that these parts of us are in right now. So I want to say a little bit, I'll some questions in a minute. I just want to say a little bit about how these exiled parts show up in our life and in focusing. Just to kind of build a bit of a picture of all of this, and then we'll pause and just check with you if it's making sense. So in our life, you know, the exiles, well, I'd say there's many ways they show up, but like something missing. In a way, the story tells one piece of it. Something missing. We feel there's something missing in our life. So what is that? I mean, there are many ways, or something missing doesn't mean an exile, but often exiles show up in that way, let's say it like that. The same goes with all these things. It may not necessarily mean, but yeah, we have something missing, or we have uncontrolled outbursts. We're fine, and then something happens, and we snap, bam, we're like, wow, what happened? We got taken over by a part of ourselves. Often that's a sign we're in this sort of territory. I think projections fall into this territory where we feel someone else is like completely perfect or completely evil. Like that's some sense in which some part of us that we can't quite own is given to someone else. You know, these extreme sort of projections. Action blocks. By that I mean parts of our life that are just blocked, that we're not doing. We really want to do it. I really want to exercise. I really want to write. I really want to rearrange my house. I really want to go on some mission or some journey, but we never get around to it. There's an exiled part in that process, something that isn't letting you, that is normally out of awareness. All we feel is the not doing of it. Self-sabotage. Patterns of dissociation, patterns of addiction, compulsion. Most of those patterns have some kind of exiled part of us at play in there. So it's something that, you know, these parts have an effect on our life, but they kind of, we can't sense them directly necessarily. We just see their effect. That's generally one of the principles. We just see, oh, right, God. It's like someone else is doing stuff in your house. Like, why is the furniture moved around? And why is that all destroyed? And like, it's almost like, yeah, there is another force at work, something like that. So all of those could be signs that we have exiles. And any place that's tangled and stuck and not moving in our life generally has one or more exiles in it. If you're familiar with focusing as a practice, you know that in focusing as a practice, they might show up just like in that story as kind of wild animals or some part of us that's really wounded or broken. Or machines or objects or like even stones, like depending on how far they're out into exile, they may not even be living when they appear in our sort of I call it sort of embodied imagination that is focusing. They come like, wow, like I've got a stone or something. Or very viscerally, often that's another thing, like really strong visceral patterns. But often, yeah, like just like the story, they're not so welcomeable at first. These parts, you wouldn't think to go near them. At first, you'd be like, I want to stay away from that part of myself, or something, and you would think that. So I'll just pause there because there's been a bit. So just give a little bit of a pause and just check the kind of any questions about what I've said so far, anything right from the beginning, the poem and the story and the. Any bits of it, please, and you feel free to chat the question if you don't want to speak and it's a big group. I understand it might not be easy. It's totally okay to chat or just unmute yourself. Just gonna wait a moment. Yes. The poem's great, isn't it? I love that poem. It was written during lockdown. Well, we are sort of still in that process, but it was written in the heart of that. But it really applies much more broadly. In the story of a dog was banished, as is sometimes the case. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you'll see in a minute. I'll draw this, but let's just say it now. Something like, let's say something banishes. Parts don't go there. They're not exiled. They don't. No one would willingly exile themselves inside of us. You know, it's because there's some other force applying to it. Normally, when we're small, it's other people, other people's, or certain kinds of processes lead to exile. So, but later, as we internalize those dynamics, it's us or another part of us really doing that. But yeah, something is banishing another part. That's right, or part of us. Yeah. Anything else? Just checking before we move on.
I have a question.
Please, yeah, Marlene, go ahead.
Can you be aware that you're exiling something, or is it always? Do they come out of the woodwork? If you're just patient and trying to pay attention.
So the question is, can you be aware when you're doing it?
That
you're
exiling?
Yeah.
Can you be consciously doing it? I guess is what I'm asking.
I love that question. I'm thinking of experiences of like when I know I'm pushing something away. You know, I guess exile is, it has many degrees, let's say something like that. Like it could be like far out into the forest, to use that image. But sometimes it's just like we just push it into the undergrowth or something because some part of us isn't ready to see it at this moment. So that's that kind of exiling is a little bit more conscious, and we might be a little bit more aware of it, or slightly aware of it, something like that. But I think the kind of the story and that points to a sort of older and deeper patterning of exiling that we probably weren't aware of at the time. So there's probably a spectrum between that, and of course, the more you become aware of that process, you will become more conscious. Yeah. That's also true. Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, like you said, welcome is not all at once. Seems an important point. Thank you. Yeah, that's right. I suddenly got that today. I thought, oh, right. I think I've done quite a few, I don't know, different retreats or like, just, yeah, really embrace your experience. Love your experience. I'm like, I can't do that. I can welcome it. That I can do. And I'll talk more about this in a minute, but yeah. Yes, our exile is the same thing as what's sometimes referred to as small ones. So yeah, this is referring to a small word. I'm guessing Sarah said that. I'll come back to someone else who's raised their hand in a minute. Yeah, small one is what a part of a model, which I won't be going all into here, but it's like a kind of, yeah, that's a kind of exiled one, a kind of younger part of us in Anne Wise-Cornell's system. They're not the only things that get exiled, but there are typically that. So this is the kind of part of you that wasn't able to be met in some kind of experience, let's say. Might it be we aware of something is we aware of something rationally, but the emotional part is exiled? Yeah, absolutely, G. Yeah, I like that question. You know, we can know the story of an experience, can't we? Like, oh yeah, this happened to me, I was attacked or something, and then we can tell the story, but then we connect to it, but the emotions of it are completely disconnected from us. So yeah, absolutely. I'll just take one more question here. Someone raised a hand and I don't know what that means.
Peter, hi.
Hi.
Helen here. Thank you for this this evening.
Oh, there you are, sorry, good. Thank you. Yeah, carry on, please.
I wanted to ask, in the poem, I really liked, for some reason, the detail about the matted hair. And, and it made me wonder if, you know, with the exile parts, as it made me wonder if almost as if the conditions of the world or of the person are not hospitable just for that part, because I guess the detail about the matted hair, it's like it's just not kind of put away and numb. It's still got needs or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, this kind of neglect. And I just wondered if it was something like in the psyche where it's just cut off because it doesn't know how to have it in this world. And that maybe the reclamation is to do with making it more hospitable or something like that.
But exactly. Yeah, I love that. That's right. And what it points to is it's a living thing, you know, this part of us. It's not a dead thing. So you might think, oh, it's like you put it in the cupboard or in the forest or something, and it just stays there static. But no, it's a kind of living. It's responding. So that's one thing I'm responding to in what you're saying. Yeah, it is kind of. It's not a dead thing, so it continues to live in its own sort of way in the forest. And the second part of what you were saying. I can't remember now. There was another piece, but yeah.
To do it being about the conditions. Or...
Yeah, the conditions. Yeah, there's a welcoming conditions. We'll come to that in a minute. Exactly. What it's waiting for is welcoming conditions. So, yeah, thank you. I want to draw... Yeah, look at a little bit about how we end up with exiled parts. I'm going to share my screen. I've never done this before. So I hope it works. So I'm going to share a kind of what's called a whiteboard. I'm going to draw a very crude, by that I mean simplistic, diagram of a process, in which to somewhat to some degree describes this process of exiling. So let me just see if this goes. Can you see that? It's just white now, I'm assuming. Great. Okay. So this is really clumsy, and I don't mean that with any self-criticism. I just mean it's simplistic, but I'll do it anyway. So it's like we kind of come into a move through the world, if you like, or we can do that in a very authentic way. It's like a sort of just us as we are. So this is a sort of oh no, wrong color. But let's just say blue. So like this is an amoeba being. So this is us in our essence, the being that's the kind of living in the world, moving and meeting experience. But then something happens. We meet something. We meet another kind of process. All sorts of different kinds of processes, but let's say we meet the world around us, you know, and that world either welcomes some bits and doesn't welcome other bits. So we end up with another line, and I'll draw this over the top. So this is a kind of, if you like, the shape. The blue is the shape of the world, the shape you are, and the red is the shape others, the world, our culture, our family want us to be. So you've got these two intersecting shapes. And then you see, and I just, on the edge, you've got parts of you that don't fit into that red line. They're kind of squished out of awareness or because they don't fit in. They kind of live in these hinterlands. So let's just pick a little. So this, I'm talking about these areas here. So this is where it's you, but for some reason isn't able to be welcomed by those around you. So this becomes exiled. So bits of ourselves, experiences, emotions, aspects of who we are, maybe really important ones, become exiled. They're not allowed to be there. You get the idea? So we could call that exiled, we could call that a shadow, we could call it the unlived life. That's another way of looking at it, our unlived life. It's our life we have, because it's in our body, but it hasn't yet been met, it gets pushed out of experience, out of awareness. Oh yeah. And we feel the missing of it, you know, we feel the missing of these parts of us, of these parts of us here. They're like So they're there, but kind of in the forest, to use its sorry metaphor. So there's two reasons why this happens. And let's just two main reasons why this happens. I'm going to put, will this work? Let's just see if this works. Oh no, I've never done this. Rejection. Oops. Rejection by those important to us, and to overwhelm. Trauma. So I'll just explain that a bit more. So this is very broad and big brush strokes, yeah. So two reasons why parts of us get exiled, or aspects of us get exiled. One is because they're those people around us who are important to us, you know, caregivers, teachers, other friends, ongoingly, really. You know, they reject for some reason, and normally because it's some bigger pattern in our culture, they reject certain aspects of us. So if you're a man, you know, your emotions aren't welcome. Your vulnerability, for example, or your anger isn't welcome. Or some other aspect of your experience, even your playfulness, you know, your exuberance, the fact that you take a long time to do things. You know, our world is full of the right and wrong way to do things. So parts of us get rejected, you know. And the second reason, overwhelm, trauma. This is a kind of something happens to you that can't be met by those around you. Really, that's a better way. Trauma is much more easily defined by not just by the event, but by the fact it can't be met. The complications of trauma, what you might call PTSD and other similar conditions, are defined much more because something that experience was not able to be met in you, rather than the experience itself. So when we're overwhelmed in all sorts of different ways, ongoingly, developmentally, or by single events, you know, and that experience, we're not able to share any of that experience and process it, we end up with exiled parts of ourselves, because that's the way we manage. It's a great thing, you know, it keeps things out of awareness that are really difficult. Of course, there's a lot more nuance to all of that. There may be other ways, but that's just a sort of simplistic diagram of what happened. So yeah, we end up with exiles. I'll just stop sharing there. Let me just save that in case I need it. Great. So I just want to check that makes sense. That picture and the great.
Can I just say just one thing?
Yeah.
In this case, you have the dog.
Yeah.
The guy, when he was little, he had a dog and he loved it.
Mm.
And then when it was taken away from him, then he was kind of consciously searching for the feeling he left.
That's right.
Inside. So I think it's important in this case that there is this wish or desire to find the missing piece. So
that's right.
There has to be some sort of consciousness of that, or some intention of feeling whole again.
Yeah.
That piece that you loved once, or some memory of that, or something that you feel or comes again and again in your life that puts your attention on that situation or emotion or feeling or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that element has to be there. I like that. That makes sense. Yeah. You'd have to want, you know, you would know there was something there to be welcomed in some way, or it needed, even if you knew it was difficult, you would be like, okay, I need to, and that needs to happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. Great. So yeah, I want to say a little bit about how to welcome them. I'm going to just do a little playful exploration now, and it's sort of one of those things with a group. When you do a group experiment, it may not work for all of you, but let's just give it a go. So remember, in the poem, it mentioned a guest house, what did it say? See, Be That Guest House Rumi spoke of. You might not know that poem, The Guest House, but if you don't, please look it up. But I want to kind of invite us into a little reflective, imaginative moment around this image of a guest house. So the central image of that poem is a guest house. A guest house is a place where everyone's welcomed. You people come and go, and you're a host. You know, you invite people in and give them a room and water and refreshments or whatever. So I'm going to invite us into just a little bit of a grounding and a sort of settling, and then invite and just reflect on this image of a guest house a little bit. Hopefully it'll make sense as we do it. But just play with that metaphor a little, and then I'll just invite some comments, just as a way of, again, segueing into this topic of welcoming or a welcoming environment. Talk a bit about that a bit. So all you need to do is be still, if you like, or some kind of pausing moment in yourself. You could be standing, don't have to be sitting. You could have your eyes closed. So I'm just going to guide us into this and invite you to share what you notice. So first of all, recontact just that sense of your body, if you've lost touch with that, the body as it is being supported in the space you're in, the house you're in. And sense its way of being held right now, wherever you are, posture. How your body's supported. The weight of the body. Different parts of your body, legs and feet, pelvis, sense your torso, chest, heart. Notice your thoughts and kind of how the mind is, all that part of you too. So all of it's there, just noticing yourself. And then bring to mind this image of a guest house, like a place where parts, aspects, feelings are welcomed. And be curious, like, if your body was a guest house right now, if your being was a guest house, how welcoming would it be of your feelings and experiences right now? And without judgment, just noticing it. Right now, are you welcoming different aspects of your experience, different sensations and feelings? Or maybe there's a sense of, I don't like this one, or I'd rather not have that one, or just sense for an image, what kind of guest house do you have right now inside? What? Just let your body offer you an image of the kind of environment inside. Is it welcoming? Is it open? Or perhaps it's closed down and the shutters are drawn, or perhaps it's full of crazy beings. Whatever it's like for you, just guess. Yeah, just see if there's a sense of you and your guests right now. What guests are there? What's your guest house like? And don't worry if it's not sort of hitting the right note for you, that's fine. Just notice how you are. Just treat it as a moment of pausing. So how is your guest house right now? Okay, gently bringing that to a close. I'd love to just open up space just for a couple of minutes, just for anyone to share what they noticed. Could be through the chat, in a succinct way, just if an image or a sense came of that, your guest house, how it is right now. Again, I know it, I'm pretty sure it didn't work for everyone that, but let's, yeah, just see what anyone noticed. Is that G?
I'm happy to say something, but I think there's someone in the chat.
Oh, is that okay? Yeah, listen.
I'll go after them.
Okay, yeah. My guest house is white and empty, but there's a grey attic space, yeah? Sometimes it's great. I love these images. Lots of guests, but some shuffling around in the dark. Nice. Yeah. I hope for serene but got faulty towers. Lovely, isn't that great? For those of you who don't know what Faulty Towers is, it's a great comedy. I found the image of PowerPoint, and right now my guest house is empty, expecting, wanting guests, but no one's coming in. Yeah, great. Gee, do you want to say something now? Read more of those.
Sorry, I got distracted. It was really interesting because I first imagined, okay, so what guest house have I been? I was like, oh, that's quite nice. And then I thought, okay, if I'm a guest house, like, fuck that. I don't want to have guests. It went complete, like, dark. I don't know if that's useful. But
no, it is. That's great. I love it.
I like the host part, but the guest house.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Yeah, yeah, and whatever your guest house is like, if you're like, it's welcome right now. There's no right way to be. You know, it's just I find it a useful image to symbol really to dwell on sometimes when I'm not sure how I am. Or so let's read a few more of these. Suppose I don't feel welcoming. Yeah, it could just be a general sense of I'm just not so welcoming. Might not be so specific. A big open house, oceanic view, big fluffy pillows, but there are closed, dark offices. Wonderful. Mine seemed full and bare and barely room for me. Wow. Yeah. Not sure if I'm welcome. Shall I force my way in? Yeah, interesting. Thank you. Yeah, I found it useful to allow my guest house to be whoever it was in that moment. Yeah, however unwelcoming. That's right. Allowed in the guest house to actually come into view and gradually more rooms become available for guests. That's right. I remember having a sense of a tramp living in the basement that nobody really liked. It was really powerful to dwell on it. It'd sort of been living there a long time. So it may be a sense of the whole house or a sense of the guest might emerge in this image. It seemed I was a guest as well. Is that possible? Well, interesting. I don't know. Well, yeah, it's possible. If you had it, it's definitely possible. yeah. You know, one could look at extend the guest house symbol a bit more. You know, the guest house could be, the host of the guest house is you, big you, you could say. Some folks is called this presence or self and presence, and guests are your feelings, parts of you. So could you be a guest as well? I guess, I don't know if I would sense it like that, but it might be, it depends how the image comes really, how it works for you, but. Normally, it's more like you are the sort of the bigger container of you is the guest house, and all the different feelings are guests, something like that. But you had your image, and that's totally also all right, isn't it? Welcome. I mean, in a certain way, we are a guest. By that, I mean we're partaking in something kind of mysterious by being alive. We're a guest somewhere. So welcoming atmosphere, this is what we're talking about, a welcoming atmosphere. How do we create a welcoming atmosphere? Well, we might not be able to welcome our exiled parts straight away, as some of you have found in that exercise. Even though that poem is brilliant, I love that poem. It's not so easy to do in practice. You know, come on, monsters. You know, we have other parts of us that don't want to let other people in. Gatekeepers, safety guardians, parts of us that keep us safe, parts of us that want to control and manage our experience. And they're the first guests we work with, really, before we work with, we'll say we're first, very often, if we try and invite some, I don't know, some bit of trauma or something, like, I'm going to come on, let's get in there. And often other parts of us will come and like, I'm not having that. I don't want to feel that. Other parts of us who don't want us to feel that, for a very good reason. They're safety guardians. They are. They keep us safe. Will not let us do it. So we have some very important guests to welcome before we welcome some of those deeper exiles. So this is really the business of really embracing, or I'll say embracing, welcoming those parts of you that don't want you to feel, that don't want you to be in touch with yourself. To have a lot invested in that. Yeah, this is probably where we're starting. Or starting with the parts of us that are like, why would you ever want to go there? Such a waste of time. Nothing really ever happened. It was fine. You know, those kinds of guests. We have all sorts of guests that do their utmost to make us not have an experience. They're protecting us. So we have to be really kind and really empathic and welcoming of those. So I call these safety guardians generally, or protectors. You can have a language for it. Parts of us have a lot of, their job is to keep us safe and to keep out anything that they see is threatening or overwhelming to us. And we can't push past them, no matter how much you want to push past them. And these are the parts that like come when you like you really want to tell someone something and you find that you can't. Because some part of you is going, I'm not going to tell them that. That's a protector, for example. Or part of like, you know, I work with this and sometimes in the trauma work I do when we try and welcome rage, you know, because rage is an important part of our experience, especially when we're under threat. And when we have parts of us, the more civilized mind part of us going, well, you can't say that. You know, it'd be terrible to say that. Or like, you know, but if I let it, you know, you feel it, you might do it. And these, they're not, it's not true necessarily, but those parts of us were like protecting. No, we won't welcome that guest because it's too dangerous. So we need to really listen to those parts, really hear what they're concerned about. Yeah. Maybe I can pause there. So yeah, really we're not so much welcoming the exiles. First of all, we're welcoming the parts of us that don't want to have those in. Or some dimensions like that. The parts of us are scared. When I started focusing, I don't know how long I spent a lot of time just being with a part of me that was scared of going inside. I didn't want to have my feelings. Well, of course I did because I was there. But some part of me was like, I'm not going to feel that or go have that. I mean, thankfully I persevered, but I had to be with those parts of myself that were scared. And I still do sometimes. They're scared. They don't want me to feel things. It's too much, they'd say. What would other people think? Yeah. So pause there. Welcoming environment, gatekeepers, safety guardians. See if there's anything that comes from that. Maybe I will add more. Maybe I'll add two more pieces, actually. A really important part of a welcoming environment is often to do, or often is profoundly supported by the presence of another, of a trusted friend, therapist, group of people. Time and time and again, it's like I find it really hard to welcome myself, but when I sit with a friend, like, or a partner, focusing partner in that form, I sit with someone who doesn't have the same judgments about my experience, is could embody welcoming much more easily. It's like those parts inside of me are going, so I'm going to lean down because I've got an animal down here. Oh, here it is. these parts of us that are pushed away, like they know, they're like, oh, they can look out and they sense it's more welcoming out there. Even if it's not so welcoming in here, it's like, ah, somebody out there is not going to judge me. They're much more likely to come. So a welcoming environment isn't just inside of us, it's also outside of us. I definitely think some things some exile parts won't come at all until there's somebody else present. You can't do this all alone. I'm pretty sure of that. I could do some of it. Yeah, so some kind of context that is welcoming. Maybe, oh yeah, some question here. Maybe, oh, it might came a while ago. Oh no, it came now. Maybe important to connect with one good guest at a time. Yeah, generally speaking, I mean, no, it's not our experiential process isn't always as neat as that. We get lots coming, you know, lots of guests. I've got another one here. It's a kind of critical part of us. Sometimes, like, we get just part, like lots come at once and, you know, we be with it. But you know, for transformation, for the process to go deeper, generally, we are spending time with one and going, we're really listening to it. Oh, okay, you're really scared. Really hearing it. So that's a good point. So we need welcoming an environment, a strong container. We need a strong container. By that I mean really to develop this quality of presence, of welcoming, of being able to be with something without judgment or agenda. This is what we call self and presence in focusing, or some people call it that. I haven't really settled on a term for it, but it's like this capacity we have to meet experience without a judgment or agenda. The more we can do that, the stronger container we can create and more welcoming, and then their exiles will come. They just come. They know something's up. They're like, okay, someone's listening, I'm coming. And they will return. They will return to you. And they want to come back. You know, they want to be welcomed. Just like the dog story. You know, and that practice, you know, for me, developing self and presence, one of the key ways I've done that is through this language of I'm noticing something in me, feeling angry. I'm noticing something in me that doesn't want to feel. I'm noticing another part of me. Just constantly disidentifying from experience. That sounds a bit cold, but kind of stepping back and going, ah, right, a part of me feels defensive. Oh, okay. Part of me's feeling really rageful. Okay. Part of me doesn't like that ragefulness. Okay. So just kind of like doing that over and over again every day and every focusing practice. Now, this may not be your way. I'm just speaking what worked for me. But I think in some way, that process of separation is pretty essential to most inner work, where we're not completely identified with something. We feel like we're bigger than it, whoever you find that. Yeah. What to do with safety? That's the question here. What to do with safety guardians? Oh, no, there's another question before. I'll come back to yours, Lynn. But yeah, what to do with those safety guns? Will they sabotage your welcoming? Well, and if we don't hear them, then yeah, in a way, they'll sabotage it. That they will do their utmost to make us feel safe. They'll do anything in their power to make us feel safe. Bringing us fog, bringing us vagueness, disassociation is a kind of an aspect of this. Is like, it doesn't say feel so safe, I'm going to disconnect from my experience to some degree. So we can't push past these safety guardians. So, but that's why we need to come into relationship with them. Oh, a part of me doesn't want me to feel this. You know, you might spend many months of work with a part of me doesn't want me to feel this. So a safety guardian is a part of you that just protects you. That's my word for it. But a part of you that doesn't want you to feel something or show something, or it has some kind of protective role in your life and experience. So what do we do with them? We listen to them. We listen to those safety guardians over and over. And eventually they'll trust that you, a bigger you, is there. And they'll like, oh, God, blimey, I can give up my job. When they know there's enough presence there, they will. They'll just let go willingly. I'm like, okay, great, someone's here. Someone else is listening. I don't have to do it anymore or guarding this. Someone else is going to take care of this. But until that point, they're not going to let go. You know, they won't. And So when we get, you know, when we shut down in a process, which we might be judgmental of, I'm resisting it. Often all that safety guardians, parts of us, they're protecting us. They really want to protect us. So no need to fight them, exactly. No need to fight them. Just maybe it might be a radical concept, but everything inside of you is on your side. All parts of you. All parts of you on your side. I've not in the end found anything to fight inside of me. Doesn't mean I didn't like it originally and spent a long time not wanting it. But in the end, I haven't found an enemy in there. I think that feels really healthy or something. If that's the right word to me. Or easier to have that attitude to inner experience, that there's no enemy I'm trying to defeat inside of me. Another question. People talk about silencing the inner critic. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've done another seminar on this. It's very typical. We talk about inner, they get a terrible name, but they're kind of, they're also there trying to protect us. Prefer the idea of a safety guardian trying to protect you. Exactly, yeah. So we get different kinds of protectors. Some are more critical, or some are more, would bring fog, or some would take you to the fridge to numb yourself. All sorts of different kinds of parts of you that, for some good reason, they're not ready to welcome this other guest they're aware of. Pause there. What if the safety guardian shuts me off, protects me, but makes me feel isolated? It is hard to welcome, a guardian like that. This might sound strange, but we might have to also welcome the parts of us that don't like those safety guardians. So we take a further step back. So like let's say I have a safety guardian that likes to, that might like to binge watch Netflix. So I just want to numb out. So my current example, sometimes I don't binge watch, I only watch one or two episodes, but sometimes it's like, I just can't stop. Something in me doesn't want to feel something. Now I could give that part a hard time, but sometimes I just don't like it. I'm like, I'm fed up with that. I'm just like, it's messing up with my life. I'm tired in the morning. I'm really giving it a hard time, or something in me is. So that would be when I would welcome another part of me. It doesn't like that safety guardian, and that needs to be heard too. So it's funny, isn't it? It's like you if it's something pushing something away, that's where we start. Whatever it's pushing away, we listen to that one. So we listen to that moment of don't want it, and that's where we stay, wherever that is in all that, hope that makes sense. Any other questions? Just
can I respond to some? Sorry, that's a real dog.
A real dog. Thank you. Welcome to your real dog.
Yeah, she's like, let me go out. Stop welcoming me on the couch. Anyways, now I was just wondering about the comment. Can I comment on a comment? In the chat.
If it's posted to everyone, I think I would treat it as public and see what happens.
Okay. No, I was just wondering I've been talking my own focusing with my focusing partners about this idea of welcoming, and that it's confusing because it seems like something positive. But I think it's kind of like maybe just the opposite of rejection.
Yeah.
In a way. And it's not, well, that's not true, because it's not necessarily acceptance. It's just like, it's okay that it's here. I was just wondering. Yeah, I don't think welcome is necessarily acceptance, for me at least. But I was just wondering that if you wouldn't welcome, then like it's difficult to, the safety guardian shuts me off, this person saying, and it's difficult to welcome. But if you would do the opposite, then you would just do exactly what the safety guardian does in a way.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
The last bit, say that last bit again, if you're doing the opposite.
Well, then you shut off the safety guardian that shuts off.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So you shut off that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's the point. So I don't, welcome is not necessarily, oh, it's amazing or.
No, no.
I love you. Part, no. But
or even sort of acceptance. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? It could be acceptance. Depends on what we mean by these words, of course. And there's a nuance to it. But this piece that's important that I want to bring is about, what I said at the start, I think, is about you're welcoming something with a knowledge that there's something more to it than at the surface. So I'll give a life example of this. Is like with my son. He's a real person, not an inner person. He's a real person, lives in my house. And sometimes he hits, you know, he gets so angry, he just, that's the way his body expresses it. So do I welcome that? I mean, there's many questions around this, but underneath I know that there's something really important he's feeling. That the only way it can come out in his body is through hitting. Now I have to protect myself, and I might say something like, "I'm going to move away. I don't want to get hit." But do I punish him for it? You know. So welcoming is also includes a kind of whole knowing about what, or knowing, or a sense that what's coming is only that might have much more to it beneath the surface. So maybe it's easier to welcome when you know that. Let's say that it's easier to welcome when you know that that this part of you is acting in a certain way for some good reason. Like this, a critical voice or a safety guardian or some kind of it's doing a job in your psyche to keep you safe. For me, that makes it easy to go, okay, yeah, you can take a seat. I'm interested in what you've got to say. Tell me how it is. You're not saying you can do everything you like, you can take over, I love you. You're not saying that either. You're just giving it a place at the table and going, okay, let's talk, I'll listen. Like in the story, he says, I want to know how it's been for you. I love that. I want to know how it's been for you. So yeah, that's just, I guess, extending this idea of welcoming. I want to know how it's been for you, or how it is for you. Carry, Detti, please.
like a kind of allowing it to be, because sometimes when you said that, accepting, pushing away what's shutting you down, kind of thing.
Yeah.
This guardian who protects you, but still shuts you off from the
rest,
the people or communication or interactions.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I feel like that, and it's just like kind of a big wall.
Yeah.
It's hard to accept that, but maybe just allow it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of be there with that.
And be there with the part of you that doesn't like that wall. That doesn't like that process. That, you know? Yeah. Because it's also like, that's true. Like, why would you? Why would we?
Yeah.
Oh, gee, I find hello sometimes more helpful, less confusing. Yeah, yeah, hello is. I mean, the language and the particular, you know, we have to find our own way sometimes that works for us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, exactly. But if you have something, if you have a not liking of your experience, you have another part of you to go, oh, right, another part of me doesn't like this. And that's okay. It can be here. For years, I went on retreats for many years, and I spent most of them wanting to go home. You know, well, some part of me spent a lot of that time just like, I don't want to be here. And then I finally learned focusing, and it was such a relief to go, oh, right, I could welcome that part of me that didn't want to be there. And then retreats got a lot easier. But until that point, I was battling. What is this? Yeah, what is this? I like that. Curiosity. I mean, that's lovely. Yeah, what is this? Tell me your story. That's what you're saying to a part of you. Tell me your story. So another couple of things to say. We're coming to an end. Yeah, is what the exiles need. You know, they need a lot of time. They need a lot. Generally speaking, these parts need a lot of time. They need a lot of welcoming, just as they are, completely honoring, totally honoring. They're often, grief is a big part of this. Honoring, like, and another teacher I was studying with recently, Francis Weller, he talked about a vigil, keep a vigil. I love it. It's really particular term, it may not work for you, but some parts they need a lot of time just to be with. They've been through a lot. They need a long process of welcoming. And so it's not a one hit process. This, you know, it might be many, many focusing sessions or other processes you do, even ceremonies, all the things you could weave into this. But generally it's, yeah, honoring, listening, welcoming, environment. I want to tell you about a course coming up, but we've got 2 minutes for any last bits that want clarifying before we move on. Is self-exile a thing? Would it be? I mean, I'm curious. Can I ask more, or what you mean by self in that question? You could type it or speak it. I don't mind.
Maybe like when you reject parts of yourself, rather than your carer rejecting you.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. We end up doing it ourselves. Yeah. And it may not even started with early, it may not even be early life, you know, like say if we go through a traumatic experience as an adult, we might find it hard to welcome the feelings and experiences around that without support, you know, so we kind of, in a way, we would exile those feelings until there's a readiness to welcome them totally, so we can do it to ourselves, if you like. But most often it's a sort of a pattern that we've embedded in ourselves as we grow up. Can you get to a stage where we have no exiles, or do we need these shadowy parts of it? It's good. I don't know. I suppose I'd be wary of trying to set up as a goal of having none. That would seem, so that's what I could say. It's not, it's like, there's a richness in this material, you know, and there's also our collective shadow, our collective exiles. I mean, this is another topic we have not even looked at all. The collective way we exile parts of culture, you know, people who are marginalized, you know, there's a whole big piece around that. So I think even if you're not doing it, we have it going on around us. So there's a whole thing around that. Do we need them? Well, they're part of us, aren't they? So we can't cut off from them. They are us, you know. So yeah, the answer to the question is I think exiles do. I suppose I could also add in here that sometimes definitely this process of sort of focusing deeply with these kinds of parts, some exiles will dissolve. So you want, for want of a better term, they will be met and just kind of become integrated. But I'm wary of setting up as a sort of, that's the only way it happens or something. But yeah. It's like when someone really gets to tell their story, they feel heard and they relax. Just like the dog, it just became different, it changed. Yeah. How does grief fit in? Well, yeah, grief is one of the huge bits our society exiles. Well, death and grief, you know, that's a big thing we could speak about for a long time. One of my favorite subjects, but we live in a pretty death a phobic culture, a grief phobic. We don't like it, we banish it. And most of us have a lot of unprocessed grief individually and collectively. So it's a big piece. So yeah, again, we're probably much of what we might welcome in focusing a certain amount will be unmet grief. Anyway, yeah, come on. I might do a seminar on grief later in the year. And there is one on my website, so I'll point to that as well. Another one I did earlier in the year. So I'm aware of the time. So I just want to point to a course that I'm doing, which covers all of this. I'm going to give you a link to it. So the course is for people who know focusing. So just the basics, you don't have to know all of it. It's called No Holding Back. So it's about really freeing the potential of all those stuck places in our life, So it's a 12-week course, closed group for that time. It's I call it a deep dive course, something like that. 12 weeks, 12, that's a link to it. And it starts on in 14th of September, 12 Monday evenings. So you can find out more about it there. The early bird on it is closing soon. So if you want to get a deposit in, if you're interested, get it in before 31st of July, or at least contact me before the end of the month. You don't have to pay it, but certainly make contact. So this course really goes into how to work with these parts, this kind of situation in our life. This is a tangle. This is a collection of parts, a witch at the center of which is an exile, or many exiles. This is a tangle. So this is really about, in a way, it's about welcoming the exiles. Like this course is just another, this is just one way of looking at that course. But yeah, it's about working with these parts of our life that are really stuck. So that starts in September. Yeah, open to anyone who knows focusing. If you want to learn focusing, I have other courses available coming up, and intro courses. We'll do that work one-to-one. This recording will be available later if you want to listen in again or share it. For that course, the maximum group size is, depending on how many assistants I have, around 12. Normally around 12 people. I think that's our time. Thanks so much for joining me. Hope it's been informative. And yeah, feel free to get back to your questions. And you can email me. And I'll hang on at the end a bit if you like, if anyone wants to chat a few more minutes. But no, just feel free to leave now. And see you around. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. Bye for now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
See ya.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm curious about sort of this whole